Today's episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast is brought to you by AOS Outdoor Kitchens. They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists. Welcome to another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. Today we're speaking to Tom Poynter from Barbecue Life, who is all about budget barbecue. I cannot wait to speak to Tom, but also for us to share some of his knowledge with you. We've spoken before about wanting to do barbecue well and great, but hopefully Tom will show us how to do it well, great, and at a reasonable cost. So without much further ado, here's Tom.
Tom, welcome to the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, fellas. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's good to be back recording more episodes and talking to barbecue legends like yourself.
Yeah, it's great to be on. Thank you very much.
So I suppose first and foremost, should we introduce yourself to our listeners? Who are you, Tom?
So my name's Tom. I'm from Barbecue Life. I started Barbecue Life back in 2018. Fundamentally as a Facebook page with the idea of maybe doing a bit of YouTube. And then YouTube is fundamentally now where I spend most of my time. So we've got 3,600 subscribers now on YouTube, been running that for about 2.5 years. Specialise in cooking on the Aldi Kamado. So we're budget barbecue, and the tagline for the channel is "Where great barbecue doesn't cost a fortune." Because although we can go out and we can be spending an absolute fortune on meat, not everybody's got a fortune to be doing it. So I thought that there's a good niche here for the general family barbecuer, the dad that's on a budget that needs to be able to just pop to the supermarket and not spend a fortune on his pork shoulder or a brisket from Sainsbury's like I did last year. And being able to get the most out of these cooks without having to spend an absolute fortune on our meat and on our equipment.
I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it because when I first started out, I don't have loads and loads of money to spend. There's a reason that one of us has got like 24 barbecues and the other of us on the podcast is fundamentally cooking on one. But I found in particular, I was having to spend more and more money while I was learning to get the techniques right, because if you've got the technique on, then you're much better at experimenting with different meats. So I suppose what you're doing is giving people that knowledge through YouTube. Was that the idea?
Yeah, that was a knowledge and a bit of inspiration to be cooking more than just burgers and sausages, which is what we're renowned for in the UK as rubbish barbecue, like a few of the broadsheet newspapers said about last year, that Brits can't barbecue and we can barbecue. We just don't really know what to do. We're a nation that grills. We don't barbecue. We open top grill using rubbish charcoal and frozen burgers that we just obliterate. And I just want to try and inspire people to cook something a bit better. Spend a little bit more money on your barbecue so that you've got something with a lid so you can control your heat. And just invest in slightly better meat that's not costing you an absolute fortune. And just, the idea was if I could inspire one more person to go outside and cook something decent outside on a barbecue, then I've won. And where the channel's at now, I'm inspiring a few more people. And it's just a really nice position to be in.
Yeah, I think that's a really kind of good attitude and ethos to have, isn't it? Just, it doesn't, I suppose ultimately it doesn't matter how many followers or listeners, if you can just, like you said, inspire that one person just to take up barbecue and just realize the actual pleasure within it. I suppose for me it's like a mental well-being thing. I love being outside and just cooking. It's kind of a bit of me time. And actually I was really quite excited about this episode, because I suppose fundamentally what we do talk about, and when you are talking to people around barbecue, barbecues do cost a fair amount of money for the big brands. And, you know, people can spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds on a piece of meat. You know, briskets, if you get some certain types, they cost you hundreds of pounds. And it was really good for us to reach out. You know, obviously we had the pleasure of meeting you last year at Sizzle Fest, which was great, great fun. And obviously to chat with you a bit more. And I think it's right for us to actually sit down and talk to you who, and your USP about actually how do we make barbecue affordable for everyone? Because I suppose that's the whole point of the social community that we have. And wanting to draw people in, it's about getting as many people involved, and money, I suppose, shouldn't be a barrier to that.
Yeah, definitely. And my key place for me where I get my meat is Morrison's, because they've got the meat counter there, and the blokes that are behind that counter, they're generally sort of retired butchers that have had their own shop, yeah, and they don't want to be working 5-6 days a week running in their own shop. So they all do a few hours, and they've all got a little bit of knowledge that they don't mind imparting on. So they've got the skills to be cutting, doing all these different cuts, and you can go in there and you can ask them for something specific. And if they can't give it to you then they'll let you know when to come back in a few days' time, and they'll make sure that they then butcher the next animal the right way so that you've got the right cut you want. Because generically, they just want to get as many cuts out of meat as possible so that then you've got as much to sell as possible, but they don't mind actually going in and cutting you some different bits. The key thing that you've got to remember is that a lot of the meat is English meat, so if you're talking beef and you want them to go and cut you a brisket, the fat content in it isn't anywhere near what it's going to be if you have spent more money on it. So you've got to treat it differently on the grill.
And have you found, I'm sure within your kind of journey of barbecue, and you have gone out and bought more expensive pieces, you know, pieces of meat, perhaps for special occasions, like we all do, you know, like Christmas is a perfect example where we, you know, quite traditionally do that. Have you found that if you're cooking it correctly, you're still getting the same results? It's not like you're massively compromising on the finished result, the quality of the cook in the end?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, brisket-wise, I'll hold my hands up and say I didn't cook my first brisket until the end of last year, because I wouldn't spend £60-70 on a cut of meat that then I'd be frightened to mess it up, because I haven't got £60-70 to throw away, mm-hmm, and it not be right. So I did the Sainsbury's point ends, yeah, that they got in part of their Taste the Difference range last year. And it's not just actually a point end. I did have a point end and a flat. So I was quite impressed with that. And I think I paid £24, which I thought was a really good idea, just to try something budget and see how I got on with it. And the meat itself was great, but I did mess the cook up, mainly because I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything properly. And it was my first time of also using butcher's paper, because I've always used foil, because again, it keeps the cost down. Why am I spending money on butcher's paper when I can be using foil? And it just fits my price profile on the way I cook. And it fits the way that the channel works, where we're trying to make the best out without spending money. But anyway, I got this butcher's paper. So when it comes to wrapping, I wrapped it up, and it hit the right temperature, and I'm going in with my probe and I'm probing it. I'm thinking, it's still tough as old boots. Why is it tough as old boots? What have I done wrong? And I'm probing and I'm putting it back in for a little while longer. I'm probing and putting it in for a little while longer. And in the end, I unwrapped it, probed it, and realised that I'd taken it miles too far, and the resistance I was getting was actually from the butcher's paper and not from the meat itself. So I now know that I've got to put the probe in and give it a wiggle and make my hole a bit bigger, so then I can then test the meat properly. So my first brisket became more of a pulled brisket than a sliceable brisket, but it was still good. It still had a nice amount of fat through it. It was still juicy, and it was only me that beat myself up over it. Everybody else in the house said how wonderful it was. So you can still get really good results from a cheaper cut. Just take your time. And each cut, you've got to look at it individually. I can't say that I'm going to go and buy that one and I'm definitely going to do a low and slow cook. I might do a hot and fast version until I've seen the fat content and I've felt it, and you can feel whether there's fat throughout the rest of the muscle. by squeezing it. If it's denser, then you know that you've got a nice bit of fat through the middle. If it's really squishy, then you know it's quite lean, and then you're going to have to be cooking it differently. If you're going to be doing low and slow, you need that fat all the way through. If it's a bit leaner, then you can get away with a hot and fast cook, and then make sure you put some liquid in when you wrap it as well, so that it braises it towards the end, and that's what gives you the tenderness.
I think your point as well, that is perfect and so true. You were beating yourself up, but everyone else was enjoying it. Happens yep. all the time in barbecue. Mm. I did a brisket last year, probably around the middle of the year when things had just opened up again and we could have people around. And I wasn't happy with it. I felt like it was too tough. Cut it up and served it. And everyone there was like, this is the best meat I've ever had. And I know at least two of them were legitimate because they have a go at me for other stuff that I've cooked for them all the time. And it's so easy to have an ideal in your head of how you think something should be and how you think people should enjoy it, when actually you've probably produced something that's fantastic anyway and you're just beating yourself up.
Yeah, I was stomping around like a bear with a sore head, and the missus is looking at me like, "But what's your problem? There's nothing wrong with it." And I'm like, "Well, it's not right." And I'd given myself this expectation, like you said, and I hadn't met that expectation. And I've now learned that you shouldn't expect an end result. You know roughly what it needs to be, but if it's not quite where you need to be, I'd try and stick by the fact that there's no such thing as bad barbecue. It's just a lesson learned. Mm-hmm. So unless you absolutely cremated it and it's inedible, which I have done before, and I know other people that have done it before, and it tends to be when people do dirty steaks, they get it completely wrong. That first time, that either your steak's too thin or they've not blown the ash off the top of the charcoal before they've put it on, so it's all gritty when it comes off, or they're trying to use briquettes instead of lump. So that tends to be the one that people mess up and then beat themselves up for, but it's just because you've not followed the process properly.
Yeah, I think, again, just kind of agree on those points. It's that it's almost you want to become a perfectionist in everything that you do. And I suppose you sometimes you forget the joy that it's brought about actually doing it in the process because of this almost perfection that you're trying to get. But like you said, I suppose at the end of the day, if it's everyone that you're cooking for enjoys it and it tastes good, and like you said, it's edible, it's been a worthwhile thing. Absolutely. I was quite interested to discuss your actual barbecue, and obviously a lot of the videos that you've been doing on your channel is using the Audi Kamado, and obviously before you speak to a lot of people and you know they've got other types of Kamados, so I'm interested to know, obviously you're doing, you know, barbecue on a budget, what made you choose the Audi Kamado in the first place? What made you settle on that budget barbecue, I suppose?
So when I bought mine, I actually bought it secondhand. It wasn't brand new. So it had been purchased by its first owner in 2019 in the spring. And then in the winter of 2020, it was put on Facebook Marketplace for 350 quid, same as what they were being sold for in the shops. Supposed to have come with a rotisserie, but that didn't work when I actually got it home. And it came with some steel cooking plates from a company called Steel Smoking that I do some work with on the channel. That is like a half moon deflector, a standard like metal deflector in case you break your ceramic one, and one for like cooking smash burgers and things on. But well, it's quite a good deal because I've looked at these other sets as well, and they're sort of £100. And I'd got my Christmas and birthday money sort of sitting there burning a hole in my pocket, and I'm like, I've always looked at the Kamado Goes and kind of loved the idea of it, and then I was sort of toying between that and a Weber Summit, and I'm just thinking it's just so much money, and how long am I going to have to save up for before I can have one of these? So I saw this barbecue and I automatically went online and started looking at reviews, and there's no reviews. There's no information on it. You can't find any sizes. There was nothing online. So I kind of looked at it as, I'd like to have a go on one, but I can also see a gap in the market for myself and the channel. So that was what kind of sold it, was I wanted to get it. And then if it wasn't any good, I could tell people it wasn't any good. And if it was good, we could run with it and give out all the information and help people in the future to make an educated decision on whether they want to buy it. So, yeah, it was the fact that I wanted a branded one and I was too frugal to buy one. And this one came up just at the right time as I'd got a bit of money in my pocket and it wasn't too far away. And I just jumped in and thought, worst comes to the worst, I'll stick it back on Marketplace and I'll flog it back on again. But I love it. It's my baby. 95% of my cooks are done on there, unless I want something, a very quick, direct cook, so close to the charcoal, then I'll fire up the Weber. Or the only thing that I really feel that it cannot beat the Weber on is sort of Vortex chicken wings, because you everything on a Kamado is a direct cook, unless you've got your heat deflector in. But the heat deflector is quite small on the Audi Kamado, so you've still got a lot of gap around the outside. If you've got a big roaring bed of charcoal, there's quite a big area around the outside that is still a direct area. So if I'm cooking chicken wings on there, I just tend to go direct and you just keep them flipping. But I don't think you get as good a flavour and as good a texture on your skin as you do on the Weber if you're using the Vortex.
And how have you found the response? I was looking through your channel before, and you've picked up some traction especially around the videos for the Audi Kamado. And I think, you know, I can't remember exactly which one it was, but then I think it was like three things you love, three things you hated. And we're talking tens and tens of thousands of views where people, obviously, like you said, you couldn't find that information when you bought it yourself. But obviously, there's a clearer market for it, as so many people are watching that channel, watching that video. So, are you quite surprised at the kind of, I suppose, the level of interest in that type of barbecue, and you know, and the reactions that you've gained through your channel off those?
So yeah, initially it completely blew my mind, because I'd been doing the channel for over a year and my subscribers were trickling up, and I've hit 50 subscribers, I've hit 100 subscribers. And then the dream was, oh, if I can hit 500, this will be absolutely amazing. And then I got the Kamado in the January, and then in the spring I thought I'll put the I'd do a review video just as it was being dropped in everybody's email box to say that it was going to be available. And I put this video out just on a random day of the week. I've always put my videos out on a Tuesday. And I think it was a Friday I found out about it, and I'd been able to get this video done and edited, and I put it out. And I put it out sort of midday on a Friday. 6 hours later, it got like 3,000 views, and I was just like absolutely gobsmacked. And I'm watching the subscribers tick, 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 tick up. And it was that kind of sense of, oh, wow, I've made it sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the idea of buying it for the channel was that it would help the channel grow and it would help people. But I believe I've become sort of the go-to person on the Audi Kamado. So my inbox, email, Facebook, Instagram, there's a message, someone asking a question every single day. Before Christmas, it was full of wives. So my husband bought this in the spring. He's told me, you're the person who knows everything about it. He said he wants such and such. Where do I buy it? So I just spent weeks just sending links to people's wives. Go buy it here, go buy it there. So, yeah, it's definitely worked. And that's why I try and tailor the content around cooking on there and then a bit of information on there, and try and get as much information out as possible. So last spring, I knew that it was coming out, so I'd already got a lot of information ready. And that's what helped push the channel forward even further. So we went from 850 subscribers last spring, and it jumped straight through the 1,000 mark. And then within another 3 weeks, I'd gone from 1,000 to 2,000.
Wow.
So it'd gone from a point where I never thought it was going to get there to we pushed through very quickly. Then I met the watch hours criteria, which meant I could start putting adverts on the video, and I could start, the channel could start funding itself through the ad revenue via YouTube, which some people did get the hump about. I did get negative comments of people saying, "Oh, you've now got adverts at the beginning and halfway through." But for 2 years, I'd been funding this channel out of my own pocket.
Yeah.
Where I've not got a massive amount of surplus money. And predominantly, I ran this channel out of my birthday and Christmas money. So I've just spread it out to make sure that I'd got stuff. Or we would try and do a video cook where it was going to be dinner, so that it's feeding everybody and I'm getting a video out of it. So it was nice to hit that place where it could start self-funding itself, and that is just growing and growing. It ticks up all the time, and we're at 3,600 now, and we've got spring just around the corner where hopefully Audi are going to drop this barbecue again this year, and I've got more content ready or planned. It's not shot yet, but it's planned ready again for this year. Hopefully again see another big increase. And it's just nice to give. I'm not doing it because I want to earn the money, because the money automatically goes back into the channel. But I just want to give people as much information as they can so that they can make an educated decision, because there's all these other barbecues out there that there's hundreds of people using, giving you all the information, and there's nobody using this barbecue, to my knowledge, other than me.
I think, like, both Owen and I are desperate to talk about this. I'll put my two reasons in straight away off the bat. I was so close to buying one last year. Owen knows that I was doing loads of research into Kamados and things. And in the end, I settled on the Monolith because after speaking to a company, I got quite a lot of money off, which helped. That and the fact that the Aldi one was so popular, unless you either pre-bought it in the week running up to when they were released or you jumped on it straight away, it was gone. So I can understand completely how that's worked out so well for you and why you're the go-to, because I think if they could make enough of them, it would be their top seller throughout the year. That's how popular that barbecue seems to be whenever it becomes available. And if you're the number one person for people to go to for it, well done, keep doing it, because you're obviously doing something right. Secondly, when it comes to the point of when you hit the point where there's going to be adverts on there, people need to understand that firstly, that means you can do so much more with the channel. And secondly, it means that you are an authoritative figure on it. You're not just talking for the sake of talking. You're what I'd like to call an expert, which seemed to be, to some people, less and less important in this day and age for some reason. But the fact that you've got those adverts on there shows that you're vindicated in what you're doing, what you're preaching. More power to you. If it's starting to get to that point, imagine what else you can do if it's funding itself. That's what people should be looking for.
Yeah, definitely. And the funding itself, that I'm able to keep putting a little bit by. And my end goal is to be able to have a barbecue school here in Kent, and tailor that barbecue school part of it around cooking on the Audi Kamado, so that instead of people just watching the videos, they can come and see it being cooked on and they can learn firsthand on what they can do and how they can do it. So it's still very much a pipe dream. Hopefully it's going to become a lot closer this year. But that's my next goal, is to be able to not come off of YouTube. I love my YouTube, but to be able to do more with it and inspire more people again in a different way to more outside.
So Audi, if you're listening, hook Tom up with a load of Kamados so we can get his school going, so more people can learn. We'll have to send him a message when this launches, just to give him the heads up.
I think the amount of emails I've sent that company over the last 2 years asking that same thing, and then going directly to the supplier as well and seeing whether we can get things from them, and they don't want to deal with somebody that's not a proper business. But yeah, fundamentally, if I can get hold of enough of the barbecues, which, as you've just said, getting hold of them, it's like hen's teeth. And then it's second hand, they're holding their value. So you're getting something that's been used and you're still selling it at that price. And I've seen one today that is a year old and they still want 50 quid more than they are brand new because they know that you still can't get them this time of year.
I love the fact there's Aldi Kamado scalpers out there.
I love the fact that a lot of them got stung last year because there were people that were genuine people that were in the queue trying to get hold of stuff. And I had so many emails and comments on YouTube saying that people hadn't been able to get hold of it. And then you're looking on Marketplace and someone's going, oh, I managed to get hold of three of them, and they're trying to knock them out at 550 quid. And at 550 quid, there's other Kamados that you can go and buy that haven't got to do all that extra transit.
Yep.
And you might get a little bit more with them, where with the Aldi, it is quite basic. But I've got all sorts of accessories for it. Some have been funded by companies, some I've bought myself. But I still do. 95% of the puts on there are done just using the deflector that you get out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And without using anything that's aftermarket, unless it's sort of a steel for cooking on. But you're going to, any barbecue that you buy, generally they don't come with them as standard anyway. It's an aftermarket part that you have to buy for doing things like smash burgers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my go-to accessory on there. But 95% of everything else is done with what it comes out of the box.
And after all, you know, after everything that you've now done with that Aldi barbecue, is what would you say are kind of the three top tips, or, you know, three things to look out for? The three best bits of the Aldi. And, you know, if someone was listening in now, unsure if like a similar situation to yourself, if they can't, you know, perhaps afford a Kamado Joe or a Big Green Egg, or like you said, a Weber Summit, you know, what three things would you say would sort of tip them over the edge to really go in for the Aldi Kamado?
There's one big thing. We don't need three things, and that is that you can cook anything that you can cook on all of them, these barbecues that cost twice or three times the amount of money. You can cook any of that on here and get exactly the same result. The only thing is, it's a smaller grill grate. So your grill grate itself is only, I believe it's 15 inches off the top of my head. So some of these other ones that you're spending more money on, you've got a much more bigger surface area. But I've got a family of five, and I can cook for a family of five on there. You can fit a spatchcock chicken on there, easy. You can fill it up with all sorts of things. There's nothing that you can't do on there that you can do on another one. The only thing, you don't get a divide and conquer, so a multi level cooking grate and little half moon deflectors. They don't come as standard. You can buy them aftermarket for just over £100, but I'll probably get absolutely shot by the supplier for saying this. I don't use mine half as much as I thought I was going to. I either cooked with a full deflector in or no deflector. And if I do want a safe zone and a hot zone, I just bank the coals up one side. And then I've got an indirect zone at the front and a direct zone at the back. So there's nothing that you can't do on there that you can do on a more expensive one, in my opinion.
You know,
pretty conclusive.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's one reason, and that's pretty conclusive.
So on the Kamado that I use, the Monolith, so it's 52 centimetre. I mean, there are bigger sizes. I do use the multi-level or the half moon deflector, but that's when I'm cooking multiple things for multiple people. or if I almost want to use one almost more as a heating rack rather than one indirect and one direct. So that's more about semantics and what you're doing. I 100% agree with you. You know, more often than not, you'll be cooking something like ribs, a brisket, a spatchcock chicken, or a whole chicken, and you don't need those multi levels. If anything, it's just because I want to be playing with stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like earlier, so for Christmas, I got, or not Christmas, my birthday, I should say, I got a cast iron plancher, half moon one for it. So I was doing smash burgers there, and then I had the raised side on the right, which I used just to slightly toast the buns on. And also, if any of the burgers looked like they were doing slightly quicker than I wanted to, I lobbed them up there when I was fiddling and faffing about to put them down. Otherwise, I've got no need for it. You don't need it. And that's the difference. Do you need something like that for an extra £400, £500, £600? Or if you're looking at the big, big brands, an extra £1,000? Do you?
I honestly don't think you do. And it's a lot you were just saying with them, with doing your burgers. I would do the same way. I bank my coals up one side. So I tend to start my burgers off indirect.
Mm-hmm.
So on the side where I haven't got the coal, toast my buns on the side where I have got the coal, and then I'll just flash my burgers off, like flame grilled at the end. Or if I'm doing smash burgers, everything's done on a big plancher anyway, I do my toasted buns on there, and smash burgers are done on there all together anyway.
If you've been looking or thinking about an outdoor kitchen, then look no further than AOS Outdoor Kitchens.
They are the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.
Their extensive showroom is based just outside Bournemouth on the Dorset-Hampshire border, and as well as numerous in-store displays, also features a live outdoor kitchen where they cook every week on Kamado grills, pizza ovens, and all filmed and shown on YouTube.
They offer a wealth of knowledge on how to transform your patio into the most incredible outdoor dining area with styles and options to suit every budget. And you can guarantee they will be able to create something perfectly suited to you and your home.
They stock and supply everything that you're going to need for outdoor cooking, including barbecues, Kamado ovens, pizza ovens, outdoor fridges, and every accessory that you would need to become the ultimate outdoor chef.
So if you want to make yourself the envy of your friends and neighbours, get in touch with them today to arrange a consultation and take the first step in transforming your back garden into the most incredible entertainment space.
Visit aoskitchens.co.uk. Actually, to talk about burgers, I noticed on your channel you're doing a burger from around the world.
Burgers around the world, yes.
Burgers. So I think I saw a Welsh one, an English one.
Indian, New Zealand. Where else have we been? Korea. That's it so far. There's another six planned for this year.
Okay.
To tie in with a few other bits. The next one to be done will be Scotland,
mm-hmm.
which may or may not involve a deep fried Mars bar.
I thought you were going to go very standard with haggis, but a deep fried Mars bar, that'd be epic.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of it just kind of like squish it down and it kind of oozes over the top. I've seen people put sort of caramel and things that you would make sort of millionaire shortbread and stuff. I've seen people put that on the top and it seems to have worked really well. So I've just got this idea of deep fried Mars bar. And the thing with burgers around the world, it's all my harebrained schemes. My brain is just running strange barbecue over and over. I've got a big A4 notepad and work hate me because it's always out on the desk. If I get an idea, I just stop what I'm doing and I'll write it down. Because if I don't write it down there, it just falls back out the other side of my head and another idea comes in and so on and so forth. So I've just got pages and pages, just this gibberish of writing stuff down, and I go back to it afterwards and I've scrawled it so fast that half the time I can't even read what it says anyway.
So obviously we've talked at length about, you know, the Audi Kamado and the journey that you've taken with your channel and the reason you got it and obviously where you are now. We briefly spoke about the kind of meat side and actually you're utilizing the supermarkets or the butcher sections within the supermarket. And again, you're trying to, you know, What about the kind of rest of the, I suppose it's probably something we don't necessarily talk about that a lot, but, you know, the sides and the, you know, the veg and those types of things. I'm again assuming you're kind of keeping that consistency with the cooks that you're doing. So are you doing kind of big cooks that are then, you know, creating lots of leftovers? Are you doing cooks that are more kind of just for you and your family for that day, or a mixture of both? How do you normally kind of, I suppose, keep that budget side in mind?
Leftover wise, yeah, if we've got leftovers, to be honest, with the five of us, it tends to get hoovered up between either myself or the kids. But I've got a backpacker that I was sent over last year by a company. So I just backpack stuff. It goes in the freezer and that tends to become a lunch for work.
Yeah.
So I'll break it up into portions and things like that. But we don't tend to get a massive amount of leftovers now. And when I'm cooking for the channel, I tend to do that as kind of a lunch. So if the missus is at work, it's just for myself, or I cook it twice over for myself and for her. So we don't tend to get that many leftovers from cooking on the channel. But the dinners themselves, I like to cook. I can cook over. I do, because then I'll make sure that I've got a decent lunch for taking to work. Because over the top chili, I always go over the top with the amount that I cook. The crock pot's absolutely brimmed full of chili, just so that I've got a few extra portions to take to work. And I do like it when I pop it out of the microwave after heating it up, and you watch everybody's sort of ears prick up, their eyes light up. And, oh, that smells really nice. Who's been cooking that? It's just that little one up over everyone that's having the microwave spaghetti bolognese from the co-op.
So one of the things that we like to discuss on the show, and something we hold very, very dear on the podcast, is I'm sure there's been a few cooks, and you mentioned a bit earlier about the brisket, but I'm sure there's perhaps a few videos that you've attempted that may not have actually made the channel, or some cooks. So do you want to kind of celebrate your fails? Confession time.
Fail. So I tend to fail at fish.
Okay.
So I did a mackerel video a long, long time ago, probably my first fish cook on the barbecue. And I'm not a massive fish person, but I try and push myself to try more because I should eat more of it, basically. Anyway, I cooked this mackerel and I did a simple grilled mackerel and a mackerel that's a family recipe that my great uncle used to do, and I can remember eating when I was a child. And I'd finished shooting the video and everything, and I put the fish down on the outside picnic table, upstairs to go for a wee, come back down, and the cat had come in the garden and had both pieces of mackerel and run off over the not a massive cooking fail, but a fail that I didn't actually get to eat what I'd cooked.
At least you had the video, eh?
Yeah, had the video. And I do say, I'd go back and say in the video that the cat had run off of it, and so it must have been quite nice. What else? I cooked trout as a video, and I decided that I was going to kind of butterfly it out, but I didn't really think about when I needed to turn it over. So I cooked it flesh side down to begin with, and then picked it up with these tongs to flip it over to go skin side down, and it just all kind of fell off, just like off. And that was quite fun, because that's on the video, and I left that in as a massive fail. And then there's one from sort of the autumn of last year where I tried to burn my shack down. So I'd got a chimney of charcoal, and I've now got rid of it. It was an IKEA portable barbecue. It had like collapsing legs that you put it in a box and you can take it off. And I hadn't quite clicked one of these legs all the way out. So as I kind of leant in with this full chimney of charcoal, I went to grab the handle and this leg folded in, and the whole chimney then just went all over the worktop in the shack. Half fell into the Weber kettle, but the rest of it kind of went over the worktop, and it's all sizzling and bubbling away and stinking.
Oh, no.
I didn't go into full panic mode. The missus come out because she could smell something, and I'm just there with a spatula trying to scoop up this charcoal off of the worktop, tuck it back into the kettle. But I managed to melt a chopping board, burn several holes in the worktop, in the floor. big hole in the I've got like a dustpan I use for collecting the ash out of the Kamado, and you can't use that anymore because it's got a nice charcoal like shape hole in the middle of the dustpan, but that's still in there as a little reminder of don't be stupid with hot coal.
So is all your work surfaces wood?
Yeah, they're just standard kitchen worktops that we had extra. I think one come out of my house, one come out of the mother-in-law house, but they were the same worktop anyway, luckily.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just the whole shack, everything is reused, recycled. That is built out of pallet flats that I got from work. So worktop's been reclaimed. I've got no problem if I see wood in someone's skip, I'll go and say, "Can I have that?" Because it's only going to go off and be got rid of. And if I've got a use for it, then I will. And this is that my whole shack. And I'd got felt left over from when I did my shed a little while ago. But all I had to buy was the right length screws and wood preserver. I think it cost me 70 quid all in. Everything else was reclaimed.
Wow. So again, very much keeping in terms of your USP.
Yeah. So I'm frugal and I don't like spending any money.
Actually, can I just ask? Sorry, Dan, just to jump in.
No, go on.
What about the charcoal? Do you spend the money on the charcoal? Because obviously you can buy cheap charcoal, but obviously there are more premium charcoals. Where do you sit on that?
I would say that my charcoal's probably mid-range. I use ever-burning charcoal. So I buy four bags at a time, and I think I got four bags last time for 94 quid. So it's just under £25 a bag. But when I first started using that charcoal, it was only £17 a bag. So it's kind of mid-range. You can spend more, you can spend less. I have used other brands, and I've not been happy with them. Some big brands that a lot of people use, and I just couldn't get on with it. In fact, two big brands that people use that I just can't get on with. One, I can't do low and slow with. It either the temperature runs away or it goes out. And the other one is just too smoky. Every time I light it, I can't stand smoke. So I'm really happy with the consistency that I get out of ever-burning charcoal, the flavour from it, and it doesn't smoke everything up when I light it.
Fair enough. I think
What about you guys? What charcoal do you two use?
Well, I'm jumping between different brands at the moment, and I'm in two minds at the moment of whether I am trying to find something that's absolutely perfect or whether I'm trying to find something that's more local and sustainable that at very least hits what I want to do. I'm sure there's probably a perfect world where I can find one that is high standard, not over the top expensive, that is also local and sustainable, but I haven't found it yet. But I keep what I call treating myself. I mean, I bought some Napoleon maplewood charcoal, which, as you can imagine, wasn't cheap because it's had to be shipped over from Canada, and I need to find something sustainable to counteract that, obviously. But I loved cooking with the small bag that I had. It got hot quickly, it maintained temperature, and it gave off this beautiful, sweet smell that also imparted into the food without having to add anything else to it. I've not cooked with anything like it, but similarly, I'm going through trying a lot of different brands out there, the majority of which are through Amazon, which again, probably isn't the best place for me to be shopping for the charcoal. But I'm getting through and I'm trying to find what I'm happy with. Also, I'm trying to stay away from briquettes because they're not the best thing at all to be putting through a Kamado because the amount of ash that you get through them at all. But I used to use quite a bit of briquettes when I was using the kettle because I found on a kettle they're much better for low and slow. But it's not worth the ash and the aggro because it starts blocking up the vents. You're not getting the proper airflow through with the Kamado. So I suppose a long story short, I don't have a specific brand at the moment. I'm still searching. Whereas I know Owen is quite faithful with one or two brands that he uses.
I've actually, I kind of do rotation around three different brands. I tend to buy Weber briquettes. They were the ones that I kind of got on best with around low and slow. And they work particularly well on long cooks, especially I've got a Weber Smoky Mountain, so that worked quite well. I've got a couple of different, I've tried a couple of different types of Big K products. So I've got their Bintachan charcoal. I've also got their premium, you know, restaurant grade lumpwood. I've tried some Globaltic. So I've got tried some of that. And I've also tried they got in contact with me last year and sent some stuff to try, and I was quite impressed with, was Home Fire. They're down as something else like CS Trading, I think it is, but yeah, they normally do like wooden fire lighters and things, generally for like indoor fires, but they also do a range of lumpwood charcoal. So I tried that, which was pretty good, and they actually sell it. I've just moved house and they sell the huge 12 kilo bags in the garden center, which is two doors down from me, so that's actually quite a good thing. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm using at the moment. So some of it's more premium than other brands, but
like in the same vein, exactly. Something happened today, which I talked to Owen about afterwards. I put it up on a reel on my Instagram, Welshman Barbecue, because something so perfect happened. I had to stop what I was doing and run in the house to get the phone to take a video of it and go, everything I put on here is 100% authentic and I can't believe this is happening, but I have to show you.
It's like a unicorn.
Yeah, it was like a unicorn. I've never been able to open a bag of charcoal before in the correct way. You know, when
pulling the string.
Yeah. So
yeah, I can't do it.
I was opening a bag of charcoal earlier and I know the technique. So for anyone listening, the technique is meant to be put your bag in front of you, the really long dangly bit have on your left, and the shorter dangly bit have on your right, facing away from you. Fold the corner over and cut it flush to like the bag. When it pops up, if you've done it right, the little bit of string will flick through. Or if you're lucky to fix it, you can use a key and pull that first loop through. So I was just like, put it down, cut it. And as this thing pinged back up, single bit of string just pops through. I was like, ran inside, got my phone, sat there. I was like, record. And as I hit record, I thought, if this doesn't work, I'm going to have a serious conversation about my priorities with myself, about having to record myself failing to open a bag. But yeah, just got hold of the little bit and pulled, and it came off perfectly. And I was like, what was that? 2 years of like actually properly photographing, recording, like barbecuing, 34 years of life. And that's the first time a bag of charcoal's opened correctly. But again, I had to record it because it was authentic and nothing like that has ever happened before. Otherwise, I would have recorded it.
Yeah, I've given up even trying that. Now I'll just take pair of scissors to the top of the bag and just cut the whole top of the string.
I try it every single time and I cut the string or whatever and I start to pull it. It doesn't. It starts knotting. I get really angry. And I try and pull it as hard as I can. The string's obviously, you know, quite tight. It doesn't do anything. I get stressed and then I just end up doing what you do, Tom, and just cut it angry. And I'm throwing the charcoal in angry because I've not been able to do the perfect open of a bag.
Owen, I would pay to watch that. Can you record yourself doing that next time and put it up? I'd love to see the Hulk smash moment of you literally launching charcoal into your Weber, so angry at life.
I honestly stand in the garden on my own, effing and jeffing at myself because I can't open a bloody bag of charcoal. It's ridiculous. but there we are.
The integrity side, you're so right, Tom, as well. An example, we've spoken about it a little bit before, but when I got my monolith delivered, Owen came over and like, right, we're going to do an unboxing video. This is going to be perfect. After 45 minutes, my wife came out and said, what the hell are you guys doing? And one of the legs on the stand was bent.
Yeah.
But because of the way that we were doing it and we were more focusing on the thing filming us, I was almost in tears and Owen was in an awkward moment of being angry because of the time he's wasted out of his day, but also laughing at me because we couldn't get this sodding thing to work and gave up in the end, called the company, explained to them, they sent out another stand and it worked fine. But again, we're going to be talking about this because these things do happen. Mm. And similarly, you can have a fantastic company as well, and they will occasionally put out something that hasn't been caught. But people need to be talking about these things and understanding it and not expecting everything to be rosy and perfect and on a certain filter and look perfect, because otherwise, when they try and replicate it, they're just going to feel conned or feel like they're failing at things, which at the end of the day, as much as I love the barbecue community on Instagram, the problem with social media is that so many people get false ideas about what real life is, and it's dangerous to be spreading that.
Yeah, and it's dangerous for the next generation because they don't know life without social media.
Yeah.
Our age, we do. Mm-hmm. We were the birth of social media.
Mm-hmm.
But our children, my oldest is 17, 18 this summer, and she's not known life without it, and then neither of the younger two. So the be all and end all is social media and everything looking perfect on there. And we're trying to get it into them that it's not. But it's not easy because that's what all their mates think. And not every parent out there is doing that, showing them that the world isn't perfect.
I really hope when you were burning down your shack, you were like, come here, this is the real social media that you don't get to see. This is what's happening in every beautician's page and space when they've had a ring light that's gone wrong, gone up in flames. This is the real reality of life. People and burning down
the
their
real
houses.
Annoying thing about that was that I hadn't hit record on the camera. So literally, I'm there one hand to go in on the chimney, and then to hit record with the other, and it went over before I hit record. And I wish I had recorded it. Mm-hmm. It would have been a jumble of just arms all over the place. But I did say in the video that what went wrong, and I filmed it afterwards and showed the damage that was done. But it would have been better for a perfect waltz and all to be able to actually have the footage of it all going over. And the not sheer panic, which was a bit strange, because normally I'd be effing and jeffing and throwing my toys right out of pram. What have I done? I just went really calm. There's a missus come out and she was like, I can't believe you're not screaming and shouting. Like, all I wanted to do was get this charcoal into the kettle before it actually burnt down. And then I spent the next 20 minutes on my hands and knees trying to find every tiny little piece that might have been on the floor. I'm not going around the floor looking for little glowing red things I don't want. Because the shack's not that far from my house. We go shack, and then we've got a hand-built pergola, and then the house. If the shack goes up, the pergola goes up, and the house comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything's going to go in one, so we've got to make sure everything's extinguished out there.
Perhaps you're going to have to do it again just to hit record so you've got something to show people. Yeah.
No doubt it'll happen again. I'm bound to miss something else up again in the future.
Should we do some barbecue bingo?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Dan, do you want to... I'll get the screen up if you want to just quickly run through.
Perfect. So every episode we like to say to our guests, look, we're going to set you a challenge. We have picked... 10, 12 different items that are going to be on a spinning wheel. It's a complete roulette. Owen hits space bar, and whatever comes up on there, you have to cook for us. So what we'd like you to do is, once something's been picked, cook it, stick it on your Instagram, tag us in, use the hashtag barbecue bingo, and we can see how creative you can get with your barbecue. And also it gives you the chance to show how much of an expert it is when it comes to working with something that perhaps you wouldn't normally touch at all. So Owen's got the screen up for us to all have a look at. Yeah. There's a few interesting items on there. What jumps out at you for either the right or the wrong reasons straight away?
Wrong reasons, pineapple. I don't do pineapple.
Good.
I'm happy enough with everything else on there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's stuff there I haven't cooked. So I haven't cooked pork neck. I haven't cooked oxtail, but it's on my to-do list, so that's not an issue. I've got no issue with anything. Cauliflower's a bit strange, but I've done cauliflower like wings indoors, or cauliflower bites, because they're not wings, are they? Although that's what they're kind of branded as. So I can get on board with that. Oh, yeah, providing it's not pineapple, I think we'll be all right.
So there's
if it's
also
pineapple, I'll cook it, but I ain't eating it.
Fair enough. There's also Mike's signature dish, i.e. your signature dish. So what would you say is your signature?
As we've kind of covered a little bit before, I'm massively about burgers, but not just your standard cheese and salad. My first ever YouTube video, and then I redid it again last year, is pork mince that I put a bit of spice through, and then I marinate apples in balsamic vinegar, and then put blue cheese and rock it in a brioche bun. And that is, if we've got someone new coming round, then that tends to be what I cook. So I think we'll put that down as the signature dish.
Sounds good. I'm not sure if my signature dish has ever come up, you know, so here's to the first one. Come on, pineapple. Right, let's give it a go.
Ooh, just on veggie meal.
Veggie meal. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the first thing? What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Is it pineapple?
No. First thing that comes to mind is vegetable fajitas. But we can probably push that a bit further. I did have a period on the channel where I was trying to do vegetarian and vegan stuff. So I've done things like pulled mushroom buns. We've done a vegetable lasagna. What else? Nothing else springs to mind. But there are a few vegetable bits on there. So vegetable meal, yeah, I'm up for that. We can work with that. That's good.
Sounds good. Yeah, so if you could just use the, when you know, post it on social media, if you use hashtag barbecue bingo, that would be great. And yeah, then we'll re-tag that on through our channel as well. Yeah, so brilliant. Fantastic. I just wanted to kind of, I suppose, finally, really, just, I know we've covered quite a lot, but what would you say is coming up for you in 2022? What should we look out for, either on the channel or just perhaps seeing you in person? What's the next steps for you?
Channel-wise, I plan to start putting videos back out in beginning of March. I've got 72 videos planned between the beginning of March and the end of September, if all goes well. It's going to be a massive, massive ask to actually get that done, recorded and edited. So yeah, but the channel I'm looking to really push this summer. In the future, hopefully a barbecue school, whether that'll be near future or long future, only time will tell.
Come on, Aldi.
There are plans. The business plan is done. There may be a location sorted. We've got to go and speak to them, but it's just whether we can tie it all together and costings and things. As I've already said, I'm pretty frugal and I don't like spending money, but this is going to involve spending some money, and I've got to make sure I've got enough in the right place. Facebook, Instagram, I plan every video from this year is going to be put on Facebook and Instagram rather than just dropping the links and trying to get people to move from one platform onto another. So hopefully Facebook and Instagram will move on and I'll be able to inspire more people or put in all of my videos out across them two platforms as well. So, yeah, just
great.
Inspire more people. That's your answer, I think, whether that's in person or whether that is over the internet.
I think that's a pretty good goal.
And final thing as well. We always say to everyone, look, we've asked you loads of questions. And we always like to say, look, is there anything that you'd like to ask us or anything that you think is important that's not being talked about at the moment in either community or just barbecuing in general? Now, we've answered questions on the before about things like how we started up, what our setups are, what we like to cook with. But is there anything in particular that you think isn't being talked about or you want to ask us?
I think we've covered it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. My main thing is that everything doesn't have to be perfect and that you can learn. Just if something goes wrong, don't cover it up with a filter. Put it out there. learn from it and tell people how you're going to learn from it, what you would do differently, rather than just trying to make it look perfect straight off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Embrace your failures and help other people from. So I think we've already discussed that.
That is literally
discussing things a minute ago.
Literally what we wanted our podcast to be about. And an example of that is I put a reel on Instagram a few days ago of a steak that I did. I reverse seared it and did it on the Kamado on my new plancha. And I took it far further than I wanted to. It was still amazing, but I wanted it to be like rare, medium rare, and took it up to the normal temperature I would, 49. And then as soon as I stuck it and seared it both sides on the plancha like I normally would, I was much more like medium to well because of how much hotter it got. Again, left it in, cut it so people could see how far I took it. I also almost set fire to the Kamado, which I didn't quite explain fully on there. But as it was being reverse searing or reverse cooking, as it were, and the fat had dripped down onto the deflector plate, as I moved it across onto the plancha and it got that much hotter, a flame licked up, caught the fat that had gone on the deflector plate and and again, like you, I think if anything gets to a proper panicky moment, I go very calm. If something's annoying, I get angry at. But if it's like, I was like, okay, just close that, starve it a little bit of oxygen. I know the heat's already there anyway for what I'm doing. That's fine. But it's always interesting when a flame jumps out of a barbecue above your head. You're like, okay, mm-hmm. I need to deal with this. But it's that exact thing, warts and all. And people need to know that even us who barbecue a lot and talk about it, things go wrong, and that's half the fun, right?
Yeah, definitely. And going on from what you've just said, ceramic barbecues and the fat soaking into your deflector plates or into the outer bowl itself can be a massive issue when you take up them temps. I've had flames round my outer bowl where I've cooked something like a pork shoulder and it's dripped down and off the deflector plate and onto the actual outside of the inside of the outer shell. And then I've gone to cook a hot cook afterwards a few days later, and when that fat has soaked in there, it's got nowhere to go other than to burn. So it can be dangerous. You've got to make sure that if I now do a low and slow cook like that, high fat content, I'm tend to take the temperature up afterwards after I've taken everything out and just try and burn all that stuff off before I go for a really hot cook, because you can get yourself in big trouble, especially if you're on a wooden structure like myself. I don't want flames licking up like I've had them before. So yeah, it's a good point about them deflector plates and how easy they can catch like that.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier on, you were saying about your Instagram, your Facebook. We haven't actually told our listeners where to find you. So, what is your handles for your Facebook and your Instagram? And also, finally, what's your YouTube link?
So, Facebook is just Barbecue Life for the page. I've also got a community on Facebook, so that is Barbecue Life Community. Instagram is _barbecue.life, and YouTube is just Barbecue Life.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, Tom. I know it's been a little bit delayed. We said we were going to talk to you last year and that got delayed, but we really appreciate you talking about barbecue on a budget and how you can still create amazing food. And I hope we catch you again in the summer and when the festival seasons come back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully. It'd be really nice to meet up. I won't be doing Sizzle Fest this year because it doesn't fit in with work, but there are a few other places that I'm looking to go to when tickets are released. Have you smoking Fire.
Yep.
I think is the one I'm looking at, maybe the one at Ascot if it goes ahead, because they've released tickets for some, but they've not released the tickets for Ascot yet, so I don't know whether they've got issues with that, but that's where I'm looking to go.
Yep.
For sure. And then hopefully some more if and when I can fit them around work commitments and anything else that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's stay in touch. I'm sure there'll be a few. Yeah, we're definitely looking at Smoke and Fire Festival, just don't know which one yet. Colchester's the one that's closest to us. Yeah. We're already at Sizzle Fest. We're potentially looking at Meatopia, which would be quite good to go to. I think there's a few this year, which is quite exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, fantastic. Right, well, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Great speaking to you.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye.
All right. That's it for another episode of the Meet and Greet Barbecue podcast. It was great to have Tom on and really talk to us about how he has managed to inspire lots of people to get out and cook barbecue food without having to spend a fortune and you know, use good quality ingredients at a reasonable cost. As ever, we want to hear from you. So if there's anything that we're not discussing on the podcast or any questions that you have for us, please get in contact with us through our website, meetandgreetbarbecuepodcast.com, email meetandgreetbarbecuepodcast@gmail.com, through our social media channels at Meet and Greet Barbecue Podcast. If you want to support the show, then on our website, there is a little widget down in the left-hand corner for buy me a coffee or buy us a burger. Any donation would be welcome, and that helps us fund the show and do more and more exciting things for you and content that we can create for you to listen to. Also, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and we're going to be putting out more and more content with all of our guests, as well as some cooks that we're going to be doing throughout this year. So if you hit that notification bell, you'll be notified every time that we drop a new episode and a new video. Until next time, keep on grilling. Today's episode is brought to you by AOS Kitchens, the South's leading outdoor kitchen design and installation specialists.